and thanks for tuning in to the 10th and Broad Church of Christ podcast. This episode is a Full Cup Cafe presentation, recorded at our weekly Wednesday night service. So sit back as we dive into tonight's lesson.
We are going to continue our Joseph story tonight. And, you know, like I said last week, Joseph is one of my favorite stories because Joseph is a situation that is much like our situation. You know, God doesn't come down and speak directly to Joseph. He speaks to him in dreams. And in fact, the dreams at the beginning, Joseph doesn't even know what they are. He doesn't even know what they mean. He just thinks they're cool. So he tells his brothers and his dad, and they get mad at him, and his brothers get really mad at him and sell him into slavery. And the thing that we made a point about last week was that even when we're chained, you know, even when we have things going on in our lives that chain us, like Joseph had, God's still working. You know, Joseph was inexperienced. He was young. He had all this, you know, everything was going against him. He had, you know, kind of a bad family situation. You know, in spite of his brothers hated his guts. You know, they were jealous of him. They sell him into slavery. They lie about how, you know, about him dying. And even in spite of Jacob, Israel, you know, the guy who was renamed Israel, the guy who the nation of Israel would come from, even though he has poor parenting skills, you know, even though he has a lack of faith and just doesn't think God can finish his promises through his other sons, God's still working. It's all part of God's plan. And we can still dream even when things are going really badly. We can still dream and imagine what God wants for us, even when things aren't going the way that we think they should go. I'm going to leave out chapter 38. If you've ever read Genesis chapter 38, you'll know why. It's kind of a crazy story about two people named Judah and Tamar. Judah is, you know, one of Joseph's older brothers. And you can read that story sometime. And I'd like you to read it. And then I want you to send me an email and tell me how you think it fits in to the Joseph story. Because I'd like to hear it. But we're going to leave Judah and Tamar out. But chapter 39, the chapter that we're going to look at tonight, so if you want to turn there, you can, even though the verses are going to be on the screen here. Chapter 39, I think, answers probably one of the most important questions for us as, well, I shouldn't say the most, because everything is, for preachers, is the most important question, right? But this is actually a very important question that we, in 21st century America, have to answer. And it's this question: how do God's people, with a God-shaped dream, live in the worldly empire? You know, because Joseph is no longer in his family of God lovers, God followers. He is now outside. He is in the empire. He is in the place where God is not the focus. God is not the one who everybody is trying to please. God is not the one who people are trying to listen to. Joseph is in a place where nobody cares what God thinks. And so I think chapter 39 answers a really important question, because we are in that situation today. You know, as much as we like to say America is a Christian nation, it's not. You know, there has not been a God-focused nation in the history of the world. Even Israel, they could never get it right. And so no nation is completely God-focused. No nation is completely Christian. And so we are in a situation where the secularization of our society is becoming more and more apparent as things progress and as things happen and as, you know, rulings and all the other things that are happening among us. We have to answer this question: how are God's people with a God-shaped dream supposed to live in the empire, in the place that doesn't believe in God? So we're going to pick up where we left last week. And tonight, I'm not going to just tell the story and make a point at the end. There's actually several points. I'm just going to kind of go "bleh" to you because there's so many good points in this story. I would encourage you just to kind of latch on to one, or if you've got, you know, a note, or if you can take a note on your computer or whatever, take out a pen, write the one down that really jumps out at you. Because honestly, not all of these will be for everybody, but I think hopefully one of these will touch you. So let's start reading Genesis chapter 39, starting in verse 1. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, brought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. Now the Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. Now, this verse is kind of difficult because the author is kind of looking back and saying, yeah, God's working. You know, we see how God worked through Joseph. Does anybody see the problem here? Because if you're Joseph, you're like, what's going on here? I mean, if you're Joseph who just got betrayed, I mean, you had this great dream and it seemed really real. It seemed like you were made to rule. In fact, if you've ever read this story, you know that Joseph was created to rule. He was born to rule. His father put, you know, his second to last son, he is put in charge of all of his brothers who are possibly 20 years older than him. You know, so Joseph is born to rule. He ends up in slavery. And so if you've ever been in that situation, you know, you know that when something really, really difficult happens, you're like, oh, what am I supposed to do now? Because you're in the middle of it. You can almost always look back at it and say, oh, I see how God was working. You know, I see what God was doing. But when you're in the middle of it, you don't know what to do. It's one of those things. So that's why this is kind of a difficult verse. But I think we can also learn an important lesson from it. And that is this. Do you want to go sit down? No? Okay. And that is this, that we can trust God to bless us in the bad times as well as the good. You know, we can trust God to bless us in the bad times as well as the good. So what season are you living in? What season are you living in? What's going on in your life? Are you in the middle of it where you're just like, what is going on here? I don't know how to deal with this. I don't know where to turn. I don't know what to do. And let me just encourage you, God can be trusted. You know, we can see in the story of Joseph where God is working much like we are used to, much like we see him working now, and God could be trusted. And so I just want to use the story of Joseph to let you see that we can trust God to bless in the bad times as well as the good times. All right, let's keep reading the story. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care, and with Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except for the food that he ate. So Potiphar sees the abilities of Joseph, and he immediately puts him in charge of every. I mean, that's incredible. A slave. I mean, this there is no doubt that this young man was born to rule. And here's something I think we can learn from this passage, and that is this. We have to be a blessing to the world around us. We have to be a blessing in the empire. You know, because here's the thing that's oftentimes really, really tempting to us as Christians is to retreat into the church, right? Because it's a good retreat. Because we know all these people and we think like them and we have the same focus. We have, you know, a lot the same values, and we have a family. You know, we have a family of people that we have grown up together with. You know, we've been together for, you know, I mean, how many people, how long has somebody been part of this church for more than 40 years? How many people? 50 years. I mean, 60 years, okay? So, I mean, here's the thing. You have this family that you grew up with. You know these people better than anybody, and we have this tendency to retreat into the church. And the question is, if we retreat into the church, how can we be a blessing to the world? You know, Joseph, he could have retreated. He could have retreated. He may not have retreated in the church. He didn't have a church to retreat into, but he could have retreated into playing the victim, right? He could have said, man, woe is me. You know, my life is so bad, and, you know, look at what my brothers did to me. Look at everything, all the bad things that happened to me. How can you be a blessing when you've retreated into playing the victim. I mean, we can be tempted to be bitter and hateful. You know, I know some Christians who are bitter and hateful. Have you seen those Facebook posts? I have. Maybe you haven't. But here's the thing. There is times when we just get bitter and hateful about what's going on in the world. We get bitter and hateful about, you know, how our Christian values are being attacked, how our ideas about and our thoughts about what should be, they're just shoved aside like some ancient archaic, you know, point of view. You know, people who follow Jesus and who think that the world has been created by God, it's like, man, you still believe in that? That's so old-fashioned. You know, we can get bitter and hateful about that, but how can we be a blessing if we're bitter and hateful? It's also tempting to just have fun pointing out all the things that are going on that are wrong. I mean, we know some people like that. Sometimes I am that person. Like to just point out everything that's going wrong in the world, but how can we be a blessing in the middle of that? So we must be a blessing to the world all around us. That's what Joseph did. Wherever he went, no matter what was going on, he was a blessing. He allowed the household of Potiphar to prosper because of his presence there. All right, let's keep reading. Oh, there's the point. So if you want to write it down, don't miss it. All right. Now Joseph was well-built and handsome. Isn't that great? And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." Oops. But he refused. "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her, even be with her. Now, here's the interesting thing. The translators, they translate that well-built and handsome. The interesting thing is that those are the same words that are used to describe his mother, Rachel. and our translators say graceful and beautiful. I don't know how graceful and beautiful turns into well-built and handsome, but it's the same words. But anyways, he's a good-looking guy, apparently. Maybe he has a little more than just good-looking guyness. Maybe there's something else there. I don't know. But the interesting thing is that there's a familiar trend going on in this story, right? The man in power is very attractive to women. The one who's in charge, oftentimes women flock to them, unfortunately, especially women who are ignored or set aside or treated as property. That happens a lot. And just once again, it just reveals somebody who was born to lead. And here's another question, another thing that we can you just stay still? Distracting me a little bit. All right. But another point that we can learn from this is that we must maintain our integrity because of our relationship with God. Notice how Joseph, he doesn't say, "Well, I don't want to lose my position in Potiphar's house." He doesn't say, "Well, I don't want to, you know, put in jeopardy my leadership. I don't want to do, you know." He says, "The reason I'm not going to do this is because I don't want to do this wicked thing and sin against God." That's a question that we have to ask ourselves. Why, what takes precedence in our lives? Why do we have good morals? Why do we try to maintain our integrity? Is it because we're afraid of the things that could happen on this earth, or is it because of our relationship with God? Because here's the thing, if we're afraid of what could happen on this earth, if we're afraid of losing, you know, our job, or if we're afraid of messing up our marriage, or if we're afraid of, you know, things that are on this earth, we might be able to do something and get away with it and nobody will ever know, right? But if our focus is before God, and if we're focused on our relationship with God, our integrity will be much more intact than if we're focused on the things of this world. Joseph was focused on keeping his integrity because of his relationship with God. And here's the reason. You know, I think at this point, Joseph sees how successful that he is. He sees it. I mean, he can see, hey, look, that dream that I had back, you know, when I was 17 years old, that was a God thing. And here I am, a slave. I am, are you guys having fun watching him? Okay, here he is. He is a slave. I'm a slave, and here I am in charge of an official, to Pharaoh. You know, I'm in charge of his household. That has to be a God thing. So he knows that God has been faithful, and therefore he knows that I can't jeopardize the, you know, my relationship with God. And here's the thing. When Don read Romans chapter 5, verse 8, we can see how faithful God has been to us. Because Romans 5, 8, but God demonstrates his own love for us in this, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. You know, that is the faithfulness of God. And if that is our focus, if that is where we are, our focus to maintain our integrity, it will be much harder to maintain it. You want to go sit down? Okay, try not to make people laugh, okay? Thank you. All right. Okay. So Joseph does not allow his dream to be achieved by the ways of the empires. Okay, so then this is what happens next. I'm just going to kind of paraphrase the next few verses. Because she keeps after him. She keeps chasing after him. He goes into the house one day, and she's there all by herself. You probably, if you know this story, just bear with me. But she goes in there. He goes in. She's all alone, and she grabs onto his cloak, and she says, "Hey, Joseph, come to bed with me." And he just takes off. He runs, leaves his cloak in her hand. She holds on to it, and this is what happens. Verse 16. She kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. Then she told him this story. "That Hebrew slave you brought us came to me to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." When his master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me." He burned with anger. Brighton, you're going to have to go sit down if you can't stop laughing, okay?
No.
Okay. Let's see, where am I? Verse 19. Okay. Verse 20. So Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him, and he showed him kindness, and he granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. And that, it's just crazy how this story keeps working. You know, here we have the dreamer. He seems to be getting closer to his dreams. He's in charge of a household of somebody who is an official of Pharaoh's. And he might even have access to Pharaoh somehow. You know, maybe he could get into Pharaoh's group that way, but it's just cut out from under him. You know, access to Pharaoh, and everything just falls apart. But here's something I think we can get from this story, something else I think we can get from this story, and that is this, that God doesn't bring about the evil, conniving, and destructive ways that humans treat one another, but he can weave those ways into a much larger fabric. See that? He doesn't bring about the things that people do to each other. He doesn't bring about the way that these brothers treat Joseph. He doesn't bring about the way that this woman treats Joseph, but he can weave those things into this fabric that includes his will. You know, that's, to me, that's incredible. You know, that's incredible because a lot of times we think, man, you know, I messed up big time, or they messed up my life big time, and we think there's no possible way that things could get back on track. And I think the story of Joseph shows us that God can weave any situation into his fabric and make it his plan. So think about these lessons. I mean, think about these lessons in 21st century America. I mean, we're living in a primarily an unchristian world, just like Joseph, but we have a dream. You know, we have a dream that God has given us. And the dream is to go and make disciples of all nations. You know, to go and make Jesus followers of all the people in the world. Our dream is to make an impact on this world for good and to bring the life-saving powerful message of Christ into those people's lives, we have this dream, you know, but we live in a place where that dream is fought against. Okay, go ahead. Thank you. All right. So what do we do as God's people with a dream? What do? We trust God to bless in the bad times as well as the good. Sometimes church isn't going so well. Sometimes numbers are down. Sometimes things are rough. Sometimes the budget doesn't meet. You know, just sometimes things don't go the way we want them to go. And we just have to continue to trust God to bless in the bad times as well as the good. You know, we can do that in our families. You know, it's so easy to get down about the bad things that are going on and to just list out everything that's wrong with the world. But if we do that, we can't be a blessing to the world around us. So if we're going to trust God to bless us in the bad times as well as the good, and since we are so blessed with such an incredible story of redemption through Christ, we have to be a blessing to the world around us. We have to be. You know, when things are going on in our lives that are just destructive and are hurtful, the most powerful witness for Christ is when we continue to be a blessing in the face of that. You know, I think about my mom. You know, my mom was dying of cancer for just the 2 or 3 months before she passed away. I think about how people would walk into her bedroom at her house, and they would just start crying because of how different she looked from, you know, a year ago. My mom was just a picture of health. She was always healthy, never sick. And they would just walk in and start crying, and she would just be a blessing to them in the midst of everything that was going on in her life. And that is a witness for Christ. You know, even the hospice nurses were just floored by my mom's witness, you know. And so we can have that same witness. If we're going to trust God to bless in the bad times as well as the good, then we can be a blessing to the world around us. And in order to remain to be that blessing, we must maintain our integrity because of our relationship with God. We must. That must be our focus. You know, our integrity comes from God. It doesn't come from any other relationship, which means that we have to maintain that relationship, that connection to God. Therefore, we have to understand that God... Is it going to come up here? There we go. God doesn't bring about the evil, conniving, and destructive ways that humans treat one another, but he can weave those ways into a much larger fabric. And honestly, I think this story answers how people in 21st century America, people with a God-shaped dream, can live in the empire, in the place where God is not focused on. So let's have a prayer and we'll be done. God, we come before you tonight, and we're just so thankful for the story of Joseph that you have preserved in this ancient document that has just been given to us from such a long time ago. And I just pray, Father, that we would take these words, the words of life, and that we would be able to apply them to today and to our lives. And God, I pray that we would be people who trust you to bless in the good times as well as the bad. I pray that we would be a blessing to the world around us. I pray that we would maintain our integrity because of our relationship with you. And Lord, I pray that we would know that you can use any evil that people do to us to accomplish your will. God, we love you so much. And we're so thankful for Jesus and his sacrifice. And I'm so thankful that he died for us even while we were still sinners. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.